And a good Thursday morning to you, and welcome into Darren, Donnie, and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Happy New Year to everybody. Hope everybody had a lot of fun, you were safe, and you're back with us here to start 2020. We are excited. We got a loaded show. We're still here in Dallas. We'll be leaving after the show to head back home. What an experience yesterday at the Cotton Bowl for the Winter Classic. Yes, it did not go the Predators' way. They fell 4-2. But wow, to be in a football stadium to watch and cover a hockey game in front of 85,630 people, it was really, really cool in person. I hope it was really, really cool on television. I know I've talked to some people. They said it was awesome. Chase, how you doing?
I am doing well, Darren. It was a lot of fun couple days to be able to do this from rinkside. Our position today is a little warmer. We are not rinkside, but
it is the first time we've actually been comfortable.
Yeah, but it was cool. I mean, it was so worth it to be right there in front of the action. So kudos to everybody that came with us and helped us out. Ryan, Calvin, Gina, Willie being on the broadcast as the ringside reporter with Pete and Hal. That was really, really cool. And the fans, you know, I was just telling the morning guys, Braden and Derek, as they were wrapping things up, I popped on with them for a second, about just how cool it was to hear the chants from the Nashville fans whenever the Predators scored. So wish they had gotten the 2 points, but it was still a lot of fun.
Indeed it was. Willie D will join us as the team is going to stay out on the road. They're going to head to Southern California today. They will take on Los Angeles at the Staples Center Saturday night, 9:30 puck drop, pregame at 8:30. And as a lot of people have already started to say, I mean, people are getting concerned, and I understand, because when you start approaching the midway point of a season, it's time to kick things in gear, or, you know, everybody's trying to wonder, is this what this team is? And we talked about it yesterday a little bit, and the players and the head coach were asked about these kind of like bursts or these windows or these pockets of games where they not only get off the, I mean, you know, you sometimes you hear, you know, it's maybe have a skid mark, right? Yeah. Or a wheel starts wobbling where they go completely off the road and down into the woods for about a 5-10 minute window or a period, and it costs them a game. You know, they can't recover. And so it seems like it's happening too much. Players were asked about it. Players were talking about it. Head coach, same deal. And that's exactly what happened yesterday. Late in the second period, first five, six and a half minutes of the third period, and they just could not recover.
Yeah, it's concerning to hear players say that. Like you were just talking about, Matt Duchene saying that they kind of scaled it back a little bit, and well, you don't want to hear that, especially in a game of this magnitude, a Central Division matchup where you're trying to get two valuable points in the standings. You haven't won a game since the Christmas break, so you've now lost three in a row, and you have players saying like, yeah, we kind of took our foot off the gas a little bit. Why is that happening? And that's, I think, what they need to figure out. Is there a message that needs to be sent? Are they not hearing a message? What's going on? Are there guys that just don't care? I mean, I don't think that's the case, but you do wonder what is going on with this team and why they have those lapses. Because we saw it yesterday, and we see it time and time again about that they will just – they'll be rolling, have a 2-0 lead, and it's like, all right, that's good. And then they let the other team come back. It's very, very concerning to me right now.
So when they're out on this road trip, which they're currently on, they will reach the halfway point of their regular season. And I think then it's when you have to start thinking, you know, not that you don't think, let me see how I word this. I was going to say you have to start taking things seriously. Of course you take things seriously throughout the course of the season. All the games count and all could factor into what plays out at the end of a season. But I'm saying the more a season goes along, the more you start getting a real gauge or feel, and people start forming even more opinions about you the longer a season goes on. It's just natural in any sport, and now people are starting to do that with this Predators team, and a lot of the early returns, so to speak, on what this team is in the first half of the season is – just kind of what their record shows, kind of a up and down. You know, you go have a great road trip, you come back, you beat Arizona, you go into the Christmas break, you erase kind of the patch you were in before that, with, you know, five games that look really good. You got 9 out of 10 points in five games. It's almost like it was forgotten. And then you come out of the Christmas break and you've played three games and you haven't registered a point. And so it's back to the, you know, the concerning level, because for most of this season, they've spent, if you were looking at the standings, on the outside looking in.
Yeah, and I'm just afraid they're going to keep being on the outside looking in unless something changes. And I don't pretend to know what that change is. You know, I know that there's a lot of people chattering right now. Do they make a coaching change? Does that fix this? I mean, I don't know. I don't know if doing that right now would. I mean, you see it. And, you know, you've seen it with St. Louis. You saw it last year that they made the coaching change and ended up winning the Stanley Cup. So it does happen. But if there's, you know, just a problem where the team is just not putting forth their, you know, 100% effort, I don't know if a new voice really fixes that or not. So there's going to be a lot of chatter until this thing gets turned around. If it gets turned around, and, you know, it's unfamiliar territory for us, at least, you know, in the last 6 years. You know, I can remember Barry Trotz's final year that it was kind of like, okay, is it time? But it's weird because this team should be competing for the Stanley Cup. I mean, with the talent on this team, they should be towards the top of the standings. There are a lot of good teams in the Western Conference, but the Predators should be one of them, and for whatever reason, they're not.
They are not, and right now, if you look at the division, St. Louis is atop the division pretty comfortably right now.
Yeah.
Colorado and Dallas are tied for second, so they are second and third in the division. So the top three teams are St. Louis, Colorado, and Dallas. Winnipeg would be a wild card team, and then Minnesota, Nashville, and Chicago on the outside looking in. Minnesota with 43 points, Nashville with 42 points, Chicago with 42 points. Right now, the cut line for the wild card is 46. So obviously, you're just 4 points out from being in a wild card spot. But just like I said, it's kind of the 18, 15, and 6. That just kind of, that sounds and looks like really what everybody thinks they've been the first 3 months of the season.
Yeah, I mean, they look like a team that is just the also-ran. They're just there. You know, they're riding along and checking out the sights. And all of these things that we have experienced over the last few years, you know, hosting All-Star games and going to the Stanley Cup Final and now playing in a Winter Classic, those are results of the team being successful. Well, guess what happens when you're not very successful? A lot of that goes away, and nobody wants that to go away. And, you know, the All-Star game is, I guess, a little bit of a different animal, but the Predators have experienced a lot of fun things over the last 3 years, and I don't want to see it go away. Again, I think this is a talented team. They just got to start playing like it. They got to start thinking like, hey, we are one of the best in the NHL. And, you know, if it's a couple of guys that are just off right now and just not giving that 100%, well, somebody in that room needs to stand up and say something. I don't know if it's Roman Josi that needs to stand, because he's been leading by example. He's been playing his butt off. You know, Ryan Ellis was playing his butt off until, you know, yesterday. He gets hurt, unfortunately, but we'll see how long he's out. But they need somebody to, you know, get in the you-know-what of some of these guys that are just skating around, going through the motions, and wake them up. That's what they need.
You just brought up Ryan Ellis did leave the game less than 3 minutes into the Winter Classic. He took an elbow from Corey Perry to the head. Corey Perry, that would end his day. That would also end Ryan Ellis's day with an upper body injury. Corey Perry will have a hearing with the NHL's Department of Player Safety tomorrow. So usually when you have a hearing, discipline is coming.
Yeah.
The question is, how much discipline is coming for Corey Perry?
I feel like he gets at least a game for that, maybe two.
Oh, he's getting a game.
Yeah.
He's going in front he's going in front of him. He's getting.
Three would probably be the right number, I think. But we'll see what they actually do. But look, you can't. They're trying to get plays like that out of the game. And I heard them talk about it yesterday. Some of the players brought it up. That, like, look, we're trying to get rid of plays.
Roman Josi brought that
up.
Yeah,
Roman Josi.
In particular, said, look, this is exactly what the league is trying to get out of the game. And that's exactly what happened. Corey Perry did receive a 5-minute major. Of course, the Predators did capitalize on that with their two goals in the game. The problem is
that was
the first 5 minutes of the game, and there really wasn't a whole lot after. They had a couple times to, I thought, and we talked about it yesterday, to really bury the Stars, and it just didn't happen. And, you know, you let a good team hang around, and sometimes like that, that happens. And then when they cut the lead, it takes one goal. You cut the lead in half, and then another one, it's a tie game, it's a new game, and then the rest is history, as they say. That's what happened yesterday. So we will wait and see what happens to Corey Perry. Also, we'll find out, you know, maybe in the upcoming days of what is the news on Ryan Ellis, if there's any news on Ryan Ellis, because that would obviously be a big blow to the Predators when you're trying to get something going, losing one of your top defensemen for a while. So we have no idea. Hopefully it will not be anything that will keep him out of the lineup for any long period of time, but you never know with hits like that. So we will wait and see. Speaking of that, we will talk to Willie Donick. They are heading to Los Angeles today. We will catch up with him, find out what he thought about the experience yesterday. We caught up with a lot of great guests. You'll hear some of them throughout the course of the day in the last 48 hours on the show. And we just had some fantastic shows there from ringside at the Cotton Bowl. When we come back, though, we'll talk to Willie here on Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Thank you, Matias. Back here on Darren Donick and Chase on this Thursday morning. Bruce Feldman tweeting out, I'm hearing that the Browns have strong interest in former Ohio State head coach Urban Meyer.
Ooh.
Per sources.
Interesting.
Per sources.
His name seems to be surfacing with some NFL jobs. I know the Cowboys, you know, that was out there, but the Browns would be interesting. Very interesting.
That would be interesting. Let's bring in Willie Donick, who is going to be traveling with the team to Los Angeles. They will be at the Staples Center Saturday night to take on the Kings. That'll be a 9:30 puck drop. We'll have pregame here on 102.5 The Game starting at 8:30. Willie, what's up?
Hey, guys.
What'd you think of yesterday? What was let's walk through what your experience was like as a ringside reporter. Pretty cool part of our radio broadcast.
Well, let's definitely just start with the spectacle of the whole thing. The more I thought about it, you know, I've been to a lot of really cool sporting events, but just in terms of the massiveness of that place, the uniqueness of the event, I mean, it's right up there. And I had a chance to talk to some of the players after the game, and while they were, you know, crushed that they did not win the game, and they really felt for the fans. I noticed it coming off the ice. You know, they were bummed out to lose that game. They were down. The game didn't end well for them, as you know. But they walked off the ice, and they walked past the fans, who they knew made a lot of effort to get down there, and they acknowledged him. They were clapping their hands. They were pointing up there. They were looking at him, making eye contact. So I thought that was a good gesture. They really did understand what a special event that was. So job well done by the city of Dallas, by the NHL. I still marvel, Darren, and I know you do as well. And Chase, you were right there ringside. We're looking at that ice and we're saying, it's amazing how they do that, right?
Yeah.
How they put that whole thing together. It was a football field.
Yeah. No doubt about it.
And the ice was in great condition. I mean, I heard some of the guys say that, look, you know, the puck was a little bouncy, but the ice was great.
It's never going to be perfect in an outdoor.
Sure.
It's not perfect in arenas. So
right.
Considering the circumstances, and quite honestly, they could not have drawn up a better day weather-wise. I mean, honestly, if you were to say what would be perfect conditions for an outdoor game, yesterday was perfect conditions. What, low 50s, 50 degrees? Overcast and gray.
Yeah.
No rain. I mean, it doesn't get any better than that.
And not
for an outdoor
a lot of wind.
Game.
Not a lot of
yeah.
wind that could
yeah.
swirl around there. Yeah. And you know, for the comfortable, for fans that stayed comfortable, you know, you're not freezing, you're not bundled up with like every single coat that you have. I certainly appreciated that. I was thinking to myself, you know, these games have been played in, you know, temperatures in the 20s. You know, I'd have been hurting. And Darren, you've done those high school championship games. We used to make fun of you on the sideline with the temperatures around freezing over. And, you know, back then it was at Murfreesboro at Floyd Stadium. But, you know, sitting out there for 3, 4, 5 hours, that even for the toughest, you know, weather resilient fans, that would not have been easy.
Yep, no doubt. Corey Perry, they have announced that he will indeed see the league, the Department of Player Safety, tomorrow. What do you make of that? What do you think is going to come of him going in front of the Department of Player Safety?
Well, that means he's going to get suspended. It's just a matter of how many games he will get suspended for. I don't see how you can defend that play in any way. You know, it is amazing sometimes when you're looking at it through your team's perspective, or you're hearing your player's argument, how, you know, you can spin it so it doesn't maybe look quite as bad. But I don't really know how you spin that. He put his elbow up. There was no reason for him to put his elbow up on the play, other than, you know, to make a risky, dangerous hit. And that's exactly what happened. He knocked Ryan Ellis out of the game. So it's multiple games. I don't know. Five to start with?
Oh, you say five. I said three would probably be what he gets, but, I mean.
Oh, it's got to be more. To me,
in my head,
be more than three. It's got to be more than three.
In my head, I was thinking five or six is what I was thinking.
I say five minimum. But I've been wrong many times before. That's the one thing I know about the player safety department, is it is hard to predict. It is very hard because no two hits are the same. It's different players, different circumstances. So I know they work very hard doing it. I just can't predict what they're going to come out with sometimes.
No doubt. So this team is now going to be – they're going to hit the midway point of their season out on this road trip. So, you know, when you get into a new calendar year, you've wrapped up 3 months of a season. We were just talking about if the standings today, they're still on the outside looking in. But, they're not far at all from a wild card spot, but they're obviously not playing the brand of hockey that they want to be playing at this point. So what has to change in the second half to get things going, in your opinion?
Well, as you can imagine, and I'm sure you guys did this on the post-game show, and I know – just looking at the social media, you know how passionate this fan base is, and everybody is certainly weighing in on what the issues are. But it's two things to me. Overall, if you want to keep it very simple, it's they've just got to get their goals against down. There's just too many games where they're giving up more than three goals. And then when you want to, you know, narrow it down to something a little bit more specific, but still in a sort of a general sense, yesterday is a great example of what has hurt them in several games during the season, and it cost them points, where one goal becomes two and sometimes becomes three in a relatively short period of time. I think it was 7.5 minutes. The last, 2 minutes.
All four goals.
The second period, yep. In the first 5-6 minutes of the third period. Mm-hmm. That's your game right there. Yep. The Predators are, I don't want to say sailing along, but they're holding a 2-0 lead. And I'm not going to say they're in control of the game, because Dallas was pushing back. The Predators were having to defend more in the second period. It's going to be hard to dominate Dallas for 60 straight minutes. You know, that's not realistic. But you're in good shape. And how many times have we said that during times this year? We were saying, okay, Preds are in good shape, in position to do good things on this night. And then, whoops, what happened? You know, 6 minutes go by, sometimes less, sometimes 2 minutes, and they've given up two or three goals. They're giving up goals in bunches, and that is what's killing them right now. But I think you trace it back to they're just not able to shut things down defensively. And that being said, it's harder to do that these days in the NHL. It's much more of an offensive skill league than it has been in past years, but good teams still have to find a way to get their goals against average under three per game. And it's north of three right now, and that's going to be, I think, the key to the second half.
Willie, you know, I heard Matt Duchene say it in post game yesterday that he felt like they sat back at times. And when I hear a player say that, it's very concerning, because I feel like they do that a lot, and they admit it a lot, but yet nothing changes. And so I'm curious of, is there somebody in that locker room that can stand up and kind of get in, you know, get in there, you know what, and say, like, guys, we can't play like this. We have to play better. We have to get, you know, keep our foot on the gas and things like that. And I don't know who that person is. I don't know if it's Roman Josi because he's the captain, or I just feel like somebody needs to do that, and there needs to be that come to Jesus type meeting with this team?
You know, the term sitting back, I think, can mean a lot of things. I look at the, you know, if we're talking about yesterday, yeah, I think they definitely hit a point where they didn't have much push. And I know a lot of people, you know, start hollering, you're making excuses when you say this, but I do think it's a reality. When you lose Ryan Ellis and you're playing with five defensemen and you just got Dan Hamhuis back in the lineup, you everybody's role was changed.
Right.
Besides, and even Roman Yossi's. It was going to be hard to generate and keep pushing without Ryan Ellis in there because he's an engine driver. You know, he's a guy that plays those tough minutes. They also took penalties, right? That's one of the reasons they lost the momentum. They took three penalties during that span that we've been talking about. But by and large, in the sitting back, they're still among the league leaders in goals for. So that doesn't indicate to me a team that sits back. They can score. They also don't have nights for the most part where they get overwhelmed and are giving up 40 shots. So on that respect, I don't know the sitting back too much. I think it's just in those small patches of games. So I think it comes back to me for that is just, you know, being able to maintain composure, poise, work your way through that adversity within the game. That is, if you could do that one thing, then I think the wins would come.
So do you think, and I'll ask both of you this, with Ellis being out, we would assume for a little bit, we don't know the update on him. I think the third defensive pairing has been a liability all season. It's an area that needs to be addressed. And Dante Fabbro, I think, has come into his own. But, you know, you're still asking a lot out of a rookie defenseman. Do you think this is the opportunity and maybe the first change that David Poile may try to make of going out and acquiring another defenseman to help, you know, shore up the back end?
I think that's a fair statement. It's not a multitude of guys. I think the third pair is fine. I think in a perfect world, though, and remember, the salary cap doesn't always give you the ability to have a perfect world. But if you could add one more veteran D who could match up with Matthias Ekholm and maybe take a little pressure off Dante Fabbro and you slide him down to the third pair on certain nights or whatever, you know, if Dante Fabbro is going well, maybe you move him up. But you get where I'm going. I mean, that's in my mind, and I'm not a talent evaluator. I'm not a GM at all. But that seems to me that would solve a lot, is if you can just get a steady guy, not even a scoring defenseman, but somebody who could fit, a veteran maybe, who could play that number four spot with Ekholm. Fabbro goes with Hamhuis or whoever on the third pair, and I think that's a pretty darn good group of six. So it's one guy, really, that might be an addition. But that being said, I think the six that they have can do the job, at least until, you know, that deal might become available. And I think the kind of guy you can get there might be more of a trade deadline kind of guy. Those guys start to become available as the season's going along.
Do you think they're going to play Tenorti at all? I mean, they've brought him up. They haven't played him. He's been a scratch. Do you think Tenorti's going to maybe break through the lineup here, maybe even on this road trip?
Yes, I do think he will play at least in one of these two games. I think that's an interesting one because you had the ability when Hamhuis got hurt to stay with the six that you had. You had an extra guy there. You were carrying seven. So they brought him up. So they actually had eight guys available, but they've chosen not to play him. To me, you don't bring a guy up if you're not going to play him a little bit. Now with Ellis, a major question here, and I don't know, you know, what his status will be going forward, but you certainly think there's a chance he's going to miss both of these games. I don't know that for sure, but I have to think that there's a decent chance that he would be unavailable over the weekend. That definitely would open it up for Tenorti, you would think.
Yep. When do you guys head out? Do you head out today to L.A.? A couple hours?
Bussing out here shortly and heading to L.A. For a regroup, two very big games. You know, you got the Kings who are playing very well right now. I mean, they're not a great team. They're sort of a rebuilding team. But every team goes through stretches where they're playing pretty tough. And I think the Kings are in that category right now. They're playing tough. And then Anaheim, you know, is never an easy game. They're a team that has had their struggles this year too. So you have opportunities, but it's really, they say this all the time, but it's all about the Predators, right? It's all about them playing their best game. And I think to a person, you listen to them talk about themselves, that's what they're saying. I think they all know that they are capable of better as a group. And if they can hit that, I think a lot of this will take care of themselves, take care of itself. Let me leave you with this stat, guys. And I'm going to go back and look at it, but I'm 99% sure this is the case, but I'll look at the date and get specific. But in the 2016-17 season, which ended pretty well, as I recall, right? 2016-17, yep. Is that a pretty good year for the Predators?
Yep.
It was. Their record was 17-16-7, right around this time that year. They lost a game in Chicago. It was a tough game. Tough feelings. Everybody ticked off going to the bus. How did they lose that game? What's wrong with the team? So I'm not saying that that's going to happen to this team because you have to earn it. But I'm saying that they're not the St. Louis Blues from last year, right? They're not 10 points, 12 points out of a spot. But they're going through some struggles right now. They have time to get it right. The 2016-17 team did get it right, and there's no reason that this team can't do it. But they have to figure it out themselves. Nobody can figure it out for them.
Yep, good stuff. All right, enjoy Southern California. You'll get to come back home, freshen up, and then go back out on the road again.
Okay,
because it'll be
thanks.
A one-game homestand. All right, Willie, thanks.
Yeah,
Willie Donahue. He'll be heading out, as you just heard, with the team to Los Angeles. They'll play the Kings and the Ducks Saturday and Sunday, and they do come home for a game, and then they go back out on the road. You will hear from Commissioner Gary Bettman. Our conversation with him on this trip before we end this hour. We'll come back. More of Darren Donick and Chase next on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Darren McFarland, Chase McCabe still here in Dallas. We'll head back today after the show. We'll close things out tomorrow back at our studios. We'll have a little pick six. You just made the list tomorrow on the program. Pete Thamel is reported that sources have told him Ole Miss is hiring former Maryland coach DJ Durkin as an assistant coach.
Yeah, I saw that too. That's interesting, to say the least, because of how he left Maryland and under those circumstances. But I guess Lane Kiffin is working on building his staff there at Ole Miss and trying to get the best available. And I guess giving DJ Durkin, it doesn't specify what his role would be.
Well, it just says as an assistant coach, so I don't know.
Right. So, look, Lane Kiffin is going to bring in who he wants to bring in. So we'll see how that works out, and maybe it gives DJ Durkin another shot to get back in, get back into coaching. So.
Also, Bruce Feldman tweeted out he's hearing that the Browns have strong interest in Urban Meyer, per sources. So pretty interesting there. I guess Josh McDaniels, I don't know all that, and I'm not sure where –
Well, I think
that is going.
I think with Josh McDaniels, you're probably not going to hear anything with him until
they're done.
They're done.
But the fact that you keep hearing, if things are quiet on a front, like if you are hearing nothing about the Browns, then it would be easy to say, look, they're just going to wait. They're waiting for Josh McDaniels.
Right.
And whenever the Patriots season is done, hopefully Saturday night,
right,
they go after. But if you start hearing about other candidates, it doesn't seem like they're really locked in on one guy if they're talking. Yeah. If you're hearing stuff about chatter about other people.
Yeah, and that's true. That's a very good point. Especially with Urban Meyer. I just find that fascinating. And, he's always been a college coach, so I don't know what type of success, if any, he would have in the NFL. Of course, we've seen it. I mean, we've seen Pete Carroll and we've seen Jim Harbaugh. I mean, they've had success in both, but then you've also seen Nick Saban go to the Miami Dolphins and not be very good before coming back to Alabama and being dominant. So Steve Spurrier. So sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. I look at Urban Meyer and everybody thought he was going to go to USC. That didn't happen. And then there were some other jobs where he was, mentioned for, and now you're hearing the NFL. I mean, he's got talent there in Cleveland if he took that job, but it's obviously different than college football.
So we'll wait and see what happens. By the way, we're here in Dallas, and the talk has been about Jason Garrett. I mean, if you flip on the radio dial, they are talking about the future of Jason Garrett. He has met with the ownership slash front office, the Joneses, twice, and they still haven't come up with a decision. I have no idea what that means.
Apparently, there's a third meeting.
What are you going to learn about Jason Garrett over 3 minutes? He's been their coach for how long? And he's been around them
10 years.
Right. So what is a third meeting going to
– I don't
understand what they're doing.
Yeah, I don't get it either. And it's showing me, and I know it's Stephen Jones too, but it's just showing Jerry can't make these tough decisions anymore. He's being so loyal to Jason Garrett, and I get it. He's been with the organization for a long time. Is that, you know, as a player, offensive coordinator, now the head coach. I mean, he was there for a long time, and so it's hard to make these decisions. But the team's not winning. The team was in a bad, bad division and had it in the bag to win said division, and they choked it away and lost to Philadelphia, and now Philadelphia has a date with Seattle on Sunday. But, you know, the Cowboys could be hosting a playoff game this weekend, and they're not. So I kind of feel like it's time for change there, but Jerry Jones apparently can't make up his mind.
He's been the head coach since 2007. Is that right?
That can't be right. Is that when he took over as the – I thought it was –
That can't be.
No,
right.
I thought it was 2010.
No, that's when he – I think that's when he was the OC, right? 2010,
Because he was the OC under Wade Phillips.
Yeah, that's right.
And then Wade Phillips got fired. And I can't – was Jason Garrett an interim? Did he take over?
Yeah, he was the interim.
Yeah.
It was like in early or mid-November.
Yeah.
In the season.
Right.
He took over as the interim.
Yeah. I think the November Cowboys, 8th, 2010.
Weren't they like 1-7 at the midway point or something, and they let Wade Phillips go?
Yeah. Wade Phillips fired after a 1-7 start.
So. Tonight, Indiana and Tennessee will be down in Jacksonville. So more bowl games leading you up to the national championship game, which will be on, when is that, January 13th is when our national championship game is going to be. So you've got Indiana. There's two bowl games today, Boston College and Cincinnati. That'll be at 2 o'clock when we get off the air. And that will be the Birmingham Bowl, and then the Gator Bowl will be Tennessee and Indiana. So 6 o'clock Nashville time. Currently the Vols are a 3-point favorite in that one.
Yep. So, look, we'll see. We talked to Vince Ferrara earlier this week about, you know, what does this mean for Jeremy Pruitt in Tennessee. I think bowl games are just bragging rights, but, you know, as the program continues, I mean, this would be a valuable 8th win for them in year number 2. Now, with all that said, that just sets the expectations higher for next year, because I don't think they were necessarily too high this year. But, you know, you go back, and if you take away the first two games of the season that they shouldn't have lost, I mean, this team would be a 9-win team. So I think people are going to look at that and go, well, they need to be a 9-win team next year. And I don't know if that's necessarily the right way to look at it and the right expectations. They still have a lot of work to do. I know they've recruited well, but now you got to develop those players.
We were kind of busy yesterday at the Cotton Bowl, but there were, you know, obviously on January 1, there's bowl games.
Yeah.
We went out to dinner last night, so Georgia beat Baylor 26-14, so congratulations to the Bulldogs. They have another 12-win season. They finished their year 12-2. Oregon gets it done over Wisconsin in a crazy game, 28-27. Minnesota beat Auburn 31-24.
Yeah, they did.
Auburn did not score in the fourth quarter.
Nope.
They were shut out in the fourth quarter, and unfortunately, as we'll have to recap, silly underdogs next week. That is going to be a critical game.
That's good for somebody.
Yeah.
Don't know who, but it's good for somebody.
We've probably figured that out by now.
Uh-huh.
And then the other one was the Citrus Bowl. Alabama trounced Michigan. The Wolverines blanked. Big goose egg in the second half.
Yeah.
They lose 35-16. Mac Jones throws for over 300 yards, 3 touchdowns. And
I was wondering how
Jim Harbaugh.
Yeah.
9-4.
Are you surprised that his name's not popping up with some of these NFL openings? That he would just bounce from Michigan and go back to the NFL?
I don't know right now how attractive Jim Harbaugh's name is.
That's true, but Would you agree that he's probably had more success in the league than he has? I mean, he's been pretty mediocre at Michigan. Did a good job at Stanford before he left for San Francisco, but he took, didn't he take the 49ers to, what was it, three straight?
Well, they went, obviously they went to the Super Bowl. Yeah, I mean, you know, he had success, sure.
Yeah.
But, I mean, he also had success at Stanford, and that just feels like such a long time ago.
I know.
And it's
Michigan's
not like
been mediocre.
It's not like it looks like Brady Hoke at Michigan, but they paid him a lot of money, and there was a lot of hubbub and a lot of people talking about like this was the hire, and who do they beat? I mean, anytime they play anybody, they lose. Anybody that's good, they lose. I mean, who are they beating? I mean, I know they beat Notre Dame this year, but you know. Beating Iowa 10-3 at home, is that something? Is that why you hired Jim Harbaugh?
No.
I mean,
and then get trounced by
you lose to Wisconsin, you lose to Ohio State, you lose to Penn State,
lose to Alabama,
you lose to Alabama. I mean, that I think a lot of people you can't. He hasn't won anything yet.
No,
I mean he forget the fact that he hasn't beaten Ohio State. He hasn't won anything. He hasn't won anything in the Big Ten. He hasn't beaten Ohio State. Certainly, they haven't been in any playoffs. So, I don't know. I have no idea what Michigan people think about the work of Jim Harbaugh, but I was amazed that they were shut out last night in the second half, and Alabama made it look so easy.
Well, and I didn't know what Alabama team was good. excuse me, was going to show up. I really didn't because, you know, it's been a while since they've been in this position where they're not in the playoffs, so were they going to be ticked off and just not care or – And clearly, Saban had them ready, and they did care, and went in there and took care of business. But I didn't know what they were going to be.
We will come back and wrap up this hour with NHL Commissioner Gary Bettman. We had an opportunity to talk to him before they dropped the puck at the Winter Classic yesterday. We want you to hear that. We'll do that next to close out the first hour of Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Today, working for the man.
That former NBA commissioner, David Stern, died at age 77. Actually, yesterday, we got news of that. One, it was sketchy for us to have any Wi-Fi service.
Yeah.
So you're 85,630 people there at the Cotton Bowl in Dallas. Wi-Fi, your phone use, it was tough. Computers, phones, it was hard to get any service at all. But so it's not like we could stay really on top of the stuff. I'm not sure exactly when that hit, but I know when we got a chance to talk to NHL Commissioner Gary Bettman, we had not learned of the news of David Stern passing away. But we did get a chance to talk to NHL Commissioner before the puck drop of the Winter Classic yesterday there ringside. And if you missed it, here's that conversation.
Let's bring him in. NHL Commissioner Gary Bettman. It's probably the hardest he's ever worked to get to an interview.
You have too many wires here.
But by the way, you did walk the tightrope right here. Very nice. Nicely done.
And actually, it wasn't the wire. It was the bag out of place that I almost tripped over.
But well, we are at a corral, right?
We are. Isn't the stadium look great?
It's amazing.
I actually heard that something like 20,000 fans have traveled here from Nashville.
We were talking about, we both came, I came Monday, late afternoon, Willie came Tuesday, and we both experienced the same thing. The airports were just, it looked like we were walking into Bridgestone Arena. They were littered with Predators stuff.
So what that tells you is that hockey is very much alive and well in Tennessee and in Texas, right? There are going to be 83,000 people to watch these two, what people would say are non-traditional, I'm going to say newer teams in the league bring, and they have great fans. And this is just a delight to see the fact that there are going to be, again, 83,000 people here. How great is that?
Yeah. And by the way, the scene outside, Gary, I don't know if you had a chance to watch. We're at the Cotton Bowl, and so there have been a lot of football games at the Cotton Bowl. You would think, if you just were driving by, there was another football game. Flags planted, smokers, cookers.
Well, but the Texas State Fair is here, and, you know, that's a big deal in Texas. And so, but it's great for the fans. For us to have a pregame celebration as intense and as vast as this one, to be in this iconic stadium and to have two entertaining, fun, exciting teams play each other. This is good stuff.
John Miller just stopped by before you came over here to our setup. He said when he came to you, because I said, tell me where this was hatched. I know it wasn't done in a lab. So tell me how this whole concept came about. And he said the portion of coming to you, there was no hesitation.
None whatsoever.
Why was there no hesitation on your part?
Because we've always believed that as great and as exciting as our game is and as passionate as our fans are, if we can find additional ways for our fans to connect with our game, you know, we don't get to have the predictability of a Super Bowl where there's one day in one city and you know where you're going to be, because our playoffs float depending on who wins and how long the series go. This was a way for us to celebrate the sport, to create a massive, huge event. I dare say there isn't a regular season game in any of the major sports that gets the attention that this does, and it's a way for us to start the new year. NBC had the foresight to say, you know what, college football isn't as big a deal on New Year's Day as it used to be. We have a time slot. Let's do something special. And we came up with the first Winter Classic, which was in Buffalo. We were a little focused on the need to sell over 70,000 tickets, which it turns out I think we did in 22 minutes. It snowed. It created an iconic picture. And we were off and running. And we'd been going to iconic stadiums throughout North America. And it brings us here today in what people are telling me they think the Cotton Bowl's never looked as good and as special as it does today.
Did you ever think in your wildest dreams, even though it was success, like you said, right out of the gates, that we would be sitting here kicking off 2020 and it would look like this in the growth of the Winter Classic and outdoor venues?
I say to people, if you go back to when I started almost 27 years ago and you told me that a team in Dallas would be playing a team from Nashville in Dallas, outdoors in the Cotton Bowl in front of 83,000 people, they probably would have had me committed.
Commissioner Gary Bettman is with us. And Commissioner, I get a lot of people during the holidays when I tell them, hey, I was going down to Dallas for the hockey game. They've heard of the Winter Classic. They say, well, can you do that in Dallas? You know, some casual fans who watch this game that may not watch a whole lot of hockey. But from a layman's term, how do you do the ice? I know you have some of the best people in the world that put the conditions together to make it game ready.
We've learned a lot. The ice is better now than it was in the first Winter Classic. Dan Craig and our ice crew are terrific. They're experts in making ice. And this year we were challenged because it poured like crazy over the weekend. They had made the ice. They had to see it wash away. They had to remake it. And again, it's not just the ice. We have to build the platform and the infrastructure and put in the boards and the glass. But we've gotten really good at that. I mean, this is our 29th outdoor game. And from an ice-making standpoint, I doubt there's anybody on the face of the earth that can make ice as well as our ice-making crew, which is why they consult all over the place, including they've consulted with the Olympics.
One thing that I know gets talked about a lot is the excitement level of the game and the way the game is trending, the ability to make comebacks. We've seen the Predators alone have a lot of games where the game has swung 3-goal deficit one way or the other that it's been turning. And I know that is something you always strive for, to make sure that you can have those lead changes. And the style of the game is just incredible right now.
The game's never been faster. It's never been more competitive. It's never been more exciting. But most of all, it's never been more entertaining. And the fact there's no lead is safe anymore. And we're seeing that night in and night out. And we're either on track or close to trending towards a record in terms of lead changes and multi-goal come-from-behind victories. And even, you know, we had a game last night where a team, I think, was down 6-0 and then lost the game 6-5 or something close to that. I mean, the games are unpredictable, and that's what fans want.
No question about it. So what can we look forward to? Let me ask you this, because we asked this to John Miller before. Every different outdoor game has a slightly different look, doesn't it? And that is what pops on TV. I can remember tuning into Buffalo that very first one, and ever since, you do the same thing. You just want to see what it looks like, right, in Fenway Park or Wrigley Field or whatever. This has certainly got a unique look.
Well, and this, we try to reflect where we are. When we did a game in San Jose, we had the Redwood Forest. When we did a game in Washington, D.C., there was a miniature Capitol building. When we did an outdoor game at Annapolis, we created an aircraft carrier, and there was a model plane by the rink. When you look at this field, when we're on TV, you're going to see something that's very Texas, and with each stoppage of play, you know, during timeouts, you're going to see an activity that will say, that's really Texas.
I'm gonna, as we wrap this up, I'm gonna get my pen out. What year did you say the Winter Classics come to Nashville? I'll write this down. I didn't catch that.
We have a pad of paper.
We
very much want to bring an outdoor game to Nashville at some point. There are a series of logistical hurdles, and I'm not going to say what they are because I'm not looking to point blame on anything. But we'd like, especially, you know, Bridgestone, who's based in Nashville, is the sponsor of the Bridgestone Winter Classic. They've been a great partner. They're a great company. So if we can bring a game to Nashville at some point, we're going to want to do that.
Good to see you. Happy New Year.
Great to be with
this
you. Happy New Year. Enjoy the day. Just look around. This is unbelievable.
Fantastic. NHL Commissioner Gary Bettman, always good to catch up with him.
There you go. That was our conversation there ringside at the Cotton Bowl yesterday, leading up to puck drop with the Stars and the Preds. We'll come back, kick off the second hour of Darren Donick and Chase on this Thursday with John Glennon from The Athletic. We do that next on ESPN 102.5, The Game.